What I want to do, Betty, is it's been a year since we last recorded, and so much has happened in the year. I've gone back over that 2 hours we recorded last time, because there was a lot that I wasn't sure I was going to remember. And I also read through, looked at your clipping, and in fact, what I did is had those reduced and Xeroxed them, so some of those we'll use for appendix materials in the volume.
Fine.
And I looked through the whole hearing. So I had several questions that I thought we could start with before we pick up where we left off. Where we actually had left off was you had married and had dropped out of a lot of union activity, and we had left off right at the time you were divorcing and getting back involved in the union again.
Well, that's in what year was?
In about 56,
yes,
57.
Uh-huh, right, mm-hmm.
So what I would like to do, though, is start. There were a couple of things that came out from the material I looked at and also in listening to the last interview that I wanted to start with. First of all, in the hearing itself, there was a reference when one of your supporters mentioned that you had joined the AFL and were picketing in 1938. And I wonder if you recall anything about that, because in our earlier discussions, I had always had the impression that it was when Douglas was being organized was your first real union.
Well, it is first real. However,
yeah.
When before back in 1938 was when I was working part-time as a waitress in San Pedro for these friends of mine, you know, that had the landing. And then way back then, you know, you had to put your picket duty just like you do now. Whether the place that you were involved in was on strike or whatever, you still had to serve so many hours a week, and I picketed right down on Beacon Street.
Now, but you were in the Culinary Workers Union?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
I might still have my picket card, my union card. I can, I'll look it up.
Do you remember how you, when we talked before, I always had a sense that Douglas was your first.
Oh, no, Douglas wasn't my very first, no.
Well, tell me
no.
A little bit then about joining the Culinary Workers.
Well, I joined the union because, of course, you had to join the union then, and these friends of mine who owned, it was called Stewart's Landing, 22nd Landing in San Pedro, and in fact, they were the godfather, godmother of my little daughter. Anyway, he was compulsory to join the union, you know, I mean, and I didn't know too much about those things then, except, like I said, coming from a military family, but I did join, and, you know, when they said picket duty, well, I went up there and I picketed. And, of course, my dad was concerned then, too, because, you know, that was Beacon Street. I remember going down Beacon Street where all those seamen were, you know, it was really rough. And I can remember, see, as a kid, you look back, I think there's another other what you're supposed to do, that's what I do, you know. And in my little waitress's uniform, you know, and everything, you go down there and just walk up and down with a picket sign. I sure did.
Now, how did you did they approach you? Was their shop, their restaurant?
Yes, it was a union shop. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So one of the other waitresses approached
yes,
you?
Yes, that's correct. Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
And
oh, yes.
What were your thoughts? I mean, it was something that you thought you had to do, but what were your thoughts about unions at that time?
Well, I didn't have too much thoughts at that time about unions, really, because this is something, you know, here was, you know, friends of mine that owned this restaurant, and they take me in like, I'm like, like one of the nieces, you know, and they were giving me a little job. In fact, my brother worked there, cleaned windows as a kid and stuff like that. It was like a family thing. So I just didn't think anything of it. I just thought, well, it's part of the thing you're supposed to do, and I did. You know, I had no objection to it, and after all, I was making pretty good money, and it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing is that, you know, Beacon Street, I was never allowed to go down there ever, you know. No. My brothers, my little kid brother, used to sell papers down there when he was a kid, and he was telling me like, a couple years ago how he made most of his money in one of those, the old bank upstairs, I guess it was a house of prostitution, but he was such a cute little kid, he'd sell all those papers to these gals up there, but it was a rough town in San Pedro. But it was, I never had any problem picketing. No one ever come up and abused us or spoke badly to us or anything like that, because after all, that was a union town.
Yeah, because there's so many of those seamen.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Except I was very young.
Yeah.
But I wasn't the only one on the picket line. There were other people, too. But that was my first association with the union.
And what union was that? was a culinary workers?
Yes, it was a culinary workers union. Uh-huh. I can't remember exactly which local it was, but I know I ran across my old union card a year or so ago, and I stashed it away someplace amongst all my stuff.
Maybe we can find it.
I'll see if I can find it. I will.
Now, were there several restaurants that were, was this as part of an organizing drive, or was it an actual strike?
No, it was an actual, they were striking.
Mm-hmm.
It was not an organizing drive. It was a strike against this one little tiny old restaurant. I can almost sit, you know, visualize it. It was right in the downtown. It was Beacon Street was just one block back of Beacon Street there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I remember picketing back and forth and back and forth, you know, with all these other women and men, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And boy, it certainly was very successful with anybody in that restaurant, I'll tell you.
Hmm.
But I thought that was the thing you're supposed to do, you know. I joined the union and, you know, and it was the right thing to do.
So in some ways, that was really your initiation.
Oh, yes, that was my initiation. Yes, it was.
And except for that one time with picketing, did you have any association with the union? Did you go to any meetings or have any contact with any...
No, the only thing I ever did was pay my dues. And they would come around and collect the dues.
Uh-huh.
They would come and collect the dues. And at that time, I didn't attend any meetings. I lived over in Lomita.
Mm-hmm.
Because my dad had retired, we moved to Lomita. So it was quite a distance, you know, back and forth and everything else. So I just pay my dues. I was no more than just, you might say, a dues-paying member.
Yeah.
But my association was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
But not very educational, excepting mm-hmm. that it seemed like the right thing to do. But maybe if I'd gone to a restaurant where they were strictly, you know, if I didn't know the people, it might be a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
But they treated me like part of family,
yeah.
You know.
Well, it's just, I'm curious, it seemed like such a crucial thing to somehow.
I'm sorry, I didn't think of that, Sharna, you know.
Because
it seems like really and truly my whole life has been with UAW and the AFL-CIO, you know, when we had merged
right.
one time.
Now, I wanted to ask, too, before the 51... Right, and before the 51 convention, which we discussed last time, in terms of going and getting support and what happened about
the increasing dues, yes.
This was not your first convention, though, was it?
No, it was not.
Do you recall your first convention?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. Well, I was just up and coming. See, by that time, you see, I was holding an office, and you know, I'm trying to remember. It had to be in the late 40s. I don't remember what year. I cannot remember, uh-huh. Isn't that awful? But I can't.
Now, and do you recall your meeting and any kind of development of a relationship with Luther? Because you mentioned at one point at a convention, and this is probably later, that you put his name in nomination. What convention would that have been?
Well, this is hard for me to remember those years. Very, very hard. I can't remember which years it was. I really can't. Did I give you some pictures? Did I show you the picture of me with Walter Reuser and I had the hat with the airplanes on it?
Oh,
that
no.
was the year.
Oh, okay.
That was the year. So I can just pin that down.
Okay, well maybe as we go in sequence, it might come to you which one
right,
that
was. Right, that's right.
But I wonder if you remember when your first real contact with him was.
Well, first real contact, well, it was during our strike, really.
Mm-hmm.
Really contact. You know, he came out and we hit the bricks, and you know, it was really a big thing. So that was a big strike. That was my first real contact
mm-hmm.
with him.
Okay.
And then later on, when I went up the ladder, when the chairs, so to speak, there'd be certain conferences and things like that, and most generally he would always be there, the large conferences,
mm-hmm.
the high-level conferences, he would be as a speaker, you know, or whatever, but my first real contact was the strike.
It was the strike.
Yeah.
Okay, well that leads us to the strike, and some of these other things, as we go in sequence, it might become clear when it happens.
Right,
we could
it's kind of hard.
It's hard. You've done so much.
Well, it was so many years ago, 30 years, exactly, you know.
I wanted to ask you, first of all, I think we covered the strike fairly well, but there were a couple of things that I wanted to ask you about. During the strike, you were already on the bargaining committee.
Right.
Now, it seemed to me that basically so much of the negotiations were occurring in Washington. And the top leadership was involved in negotiations.
At a point, yes, at a point.
Could you describe what was the role then of the local bargaining committee and your role in the bargaining, since so much was going on in Washington?
Well, after it reached a point where it had been, where the negotiation was being conducted in Washington, as far as the local union's position was concerned, none of us went back there. It was on the level of our international representative, the director and the president of the local union, of the president of the union, you know. And the president of the union normally was there. But the only time it would get, when it came back to be put on the table locally, then we'd be back, we'd be involved. Then we'd be involved. They'd bring all the information back, you know, as to the results of the negotiations, mm-hmm. and then we'd review them. And normally what we do, they would assign certain phases of the contract to each of the bargaining committee men. One would have reevaluations and job descriptions, and mm-hmm. you know, one of them would have a seniority clause of the contract, which I really enjoyed very much, and maybe one would have the job of possibly helping, assisting, rewriting job descriptions and that sort of thing. So
mm-hmm.
That's what we did. So there wasn't too much back in Washington where we as the bargaining committee. The president of the local union would go back, but not the bargaining committee.
Now, to what extent was the bargaining committee involved, though, in instructing the negotiators in Washington? Did you come up with a package?
Oh, yes. Very definitely. Very definitely. We did, on our local level. And like I say, as far as the committee itself was concerned, each of us had a particular assignment. And then we would bring that all to the table as a local union, and then of course take that to our executive board for recommendation, approval of recommendation. And then after the executive board, you know, and would approve of what we had come up with, then it would go to the international representative, and they in turn then would take it back to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at that time, you know, you'd have to always include and consider certain patterns that are being set by other unions along with UAW, and we'd have to take those things into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
So that we would have a proper and a reasonable and a sound mm-hmm. demand, mm-hmm. you know. See?
Now, how did you feel about that process? I mean, filtered up and then filtered back down. How did you and others who were in the bargaining committee feel about your own involvement?
Well, of course, you know, first time around, for that particular time, for that particular year, there were some things that I didn't particularly like too well. I thought that we should have had more attention on our local level. However, as the time grew on, and that was a very lengthy negotiation, I learned that, hey, you have to look at the whole picture, not just mm-hmm. your little local union, you know. It's education is
mm-hmm.
what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's tough to accept some of these things, but time and experience will teach you must if you're going to gain it all,
mm-hmm.
you know. So there were a couple of times where I was unhappy with some things that took place, and I asked for a meeting with some of our national reps personally,
mm-hmm.
and I would sit down and talk to them about it. And sometimes I've accepted pretty good. There was one time they didn't like it at all.
Would you remember what the issue was?
I'm trying to remember one particular issue, and that I was very adamant about it. I think it was had to do with departmental seniority.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a seniority issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt very strongly about it. I felt that it was a local issue.
Yeah.
Local
you
issue.
Oh,
I was chairman of the seniority committee for so long. And I was very, very unhappy about it. And I got, I talked to him about it. I felt that being that it was a local issue, that there could be, that they should be supporting our position. You see, that there wasn't anything going to hurt any other unions or any phase of our local union itself. And so then I thought, by golly, here I've heard about these crooked unions all these years, and maybe I finally run into one guy who's making a deal with the company. It's something the company wanted very badly, and he's going to make a deal with the company, and what are we getting for it, you know? And so I was just in there pitching, and I would just tell it like it is, you know, just talk to him about it, you know, no pussyfooting around. And that they didn't like that too well, but I got out on the table.
Now, when you would have these meetings with the international reps, would the whole committee?
Well, normally, yes, but I asked for a private meeting because I felt that, you know, courtesy, and it's something that maybe was something that I was overlooking. I learned a long time ago, too, that after all, you know, when you come up through the ranks, you don't see the whole picture. You don't have the education that some of these people do way up here. Lots of times, it's something you're missing completely, and you can really blow it. So, rather than make a fool of myself, you know, let alone where he came with an international mm-hmm. representative and embarrass him and maybe get angry and insult him, whatever, I would ask to speak to him privately. Mm-hmm. And then later, we would talk to the whole committee about it. But usually I would never go there and ask what by myself before talking to one of the people on the committee, maybe the chairman or one of the guys. Say, hey, what do you think about this, you know? And I said, do you think I should talk to him? And they said, go for it. But by God, I'd go for it, you know, because believe it or not, a lot of times the men didn't have the courage to do some of that stuff. You know, see, I never worried about having any future big career in place. You know, political career. You know, I was interested in making that shop out there and that membership out there, getting the best contract for that membership, and that's all I cared about. I had no ambitions of going high, which is a lot of things good. And in politics, you've got to play a little differently, you know what I mean, see? And so, and I didn't put the guys down because they didn't want to carry the ball on some of these things. A lot of things they did very well on, but nothing that would hurt their career, see? And it didn't matter to me. And usually, I mean, that's, I think a lot of the people in the shop like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's interesting because I think that in many ways, it's probably true of a lot of women who did come up through the ranks that way. Either they didn't plan on moving up, or they, not seeing very many women there, did not think it was too likely and were much more likely to buck the higher officials and question things than the men who viewed their careers moving up into high leadership positions. But it's clear, Betty, that that is how you came came to their eye and their attention.
Oh, yes. Became, oh, definitely.
And then became the recipient of some kinds of rewards and effect, like going to that convention in Sweden, that sort of thing.
That's right.
That you're then seeing someone who has leadership potential.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
I really do believe so.
Now, there were two things that it struck me in terms of the negotiations and the acceptance of the contract. There's going to be two points at which you were possibly at odds with the leadership. One was when the walkout occurred in March, when they weren't getting anywhere for the tactic of writing the letters, and I wonder where that idea came from. But that seemed to be one point where perhaps you were not in agreement, and the other seemed to be in the acceptance of the final contract. You'd mentioned last time that you gave your report and
said minority report,
but that you were not happy with things. Can you talk about both those issues? Yes. The walkout.
Okay, the walkout.
How was that? Whose idea was that?
Well, gosh, I don't have that record.
Why don't you put it in, and then in the transcript you can remove it, and we can, or decide how to handle it. So that's why I had you look at the transcript.
Okay, well, it was my idea. Because they were dragging their feet. Now I realized that we didn't have this half-hearted thing to worry about, and we had to comply with the government, with the rules, so to speak, okay? But they were just pussyfooting so damn long, and things were tough in those days, and people were just becoming unhappy, you know? They thought the leadership was letting them down. So it seemed like a good idea that, okay, so we learned that in politics that you just left our representatives know we're unhappy, and beside that, we want to show the international tour, hey, we still have control of that shop. The shop is backing us 100%. They trusted us. And, you know, and they would walk out. They would walk out again if they had to, you know, even clocking out, losing money or whatever, and risking all, taking the risks, you know. And we had to prove the international tour that people were still in back of us, the leadership in that local union. And it was necessary to do that. It was very necessary to do that. It really was. And then, of course, we finally wound down to the final contract. There were a couple of things that I wasn't still too happy about, but I felt that that was the best that we could do under the circumstances. But I still felt obligated, I felt the responsibility, not obligated, I felt the responsibility to report to the membership and to make a minority report, which, you know, is something you don't ever hear about, not very ever, you know, but I felt that it was very necessary. After all, we've done those little, I've kept things together, and the people trusted me, okay? And so what I did, I made a minority report, and I told them that why I thought that there were some things that I didn't like. I would like to have seen us do better, but that's the best apparently they could do. Okay?
Do you remember what the issues were that you had?
No, I'm trying to remember now, because there's been a lot of times when I take an issue with them, you know. But this one, I can just remember, well, we had our meeting over there in the Veterans Stadium, and my God, they even made it tough. They wanted me to be late and everything. They wanted me to be late. I didn't get a ride with anybody. I had to go get my car, and I had to park clear over there on Clark Avenue, mind you. And I had to walk clear across the field in the back to get to the stadium and get up there. They were hoping I'd be late so I could make another report, you know.
Yeah, you were the only one that
So I got there, and I made the report and everything else, and told the people why and the whole shot, you know. And the people were with me, but I told them, well, I think this is as far as we can go, and this is what we'll have to accept. And so they did. They bought it. But
Well, do you think that they were trying to... I think two different things happen in unions. They see someone who's coming up to the ranks who has real leadership potential, and sometimes it's the dissident. And I know from...
Oh, definitely.
That they really recognize in their two
dissident
options.
Dissident or... Or an individual who really pulls his people out of the plant to vote.
Right.
On a steward, shop steward, or chief steward's area, you know, whatever it is, and, you know, how many votes you get, they look to see, just like the politicians in civilian life. I call anything outside the union civilian life, you know. And that's what they look at. That's right, a dissident. And sometimes, and the sad part of it is, I have seen this happen with one man in particular. That he was facing so much pain during negotiations that year. I don't know if I've given you that before, but where he pulled all the painters out of the union. They all withdrew.
Oh, I saw reference to that. There was a couple hundred, wasn't there?
They withdrew from the union because they felt that we weren't giving them a good enough break on reevaluating their jobs. So the shop steward, when the contract expired, that's when you can withdraw from the union. They withdrew every damn one of them. So what they do, they take the shop steward and make him international representative. And he was a lousy steward.
Yeah.
He couldn't hardly read the cotton picking contract. But he was.
Because I think
what happens... And he's still an international rep.
I think very often what happens with unions, the dissidents and the strong people who don't just go along with everything, come to the attention and... they try and woo you, basically.
Oh, definitely. Well, the company does the same thing.
Yeah.
The company does the same thing. They'd love to have you working for them,
yeah.
Not as hard as you work for the union, you know, whatever.
And I just wonder the extent to which a lot of the ineffective goodies that you did get, like going to the conference in Sweden, was not part of that wooing process.
Oh, definitely. Oh, very definitely. Very definitely. I felt that, Jesus, this is going to be great, this trip to Europe, because it was Sweden and Denmark and Norway and Germany and England and all over. This is great because I'm going over there and I'm going to see how the other half of the world lives and how the unions operate over there and the governments operate and everything, you know, and I'll be able to come back and be able to see if I can't use some of the good things, the positive things, in our own local union.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I was more or less told. You'll come back and you'll be going to different locals and making little presentations and that sort of thing and working with other people, you know, picking up the good things over there. Well, hell, that never happened.
Mm.
When I came back, I had a heck of a time even making a report to my local union. Now, when I did come back, of course, you know, I went to New York City and I stayed there a week because of that television show with Walter Cronkite.
Mm-hmm.
However, that was fine, but they wanted it for Kinescope and for training purposes, okay? And the union did. And when I came back, though, because of politics again, I had a heck of a time even using that. They were afraid that they would just build up my political potential that much more, you know. And although the newspapers in town, they, you know, wrote up stories about the darn trip and everything else. And there was some articles in our local union paper, but nothing like I thought it would be. I wanted to utilize all that education information that I picked up from that tour. I thought that was the purpose of it. But it's true that the pilot was a perk.
Mm-hmm.
And they also used their summer schools and things like that, unfortunately, and, you know, for perks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for the people that either they want to woo, like you say, or, you know, it's, they want to keep in line or obligate themselves to,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
At first, you know, it was more or less like a vacation to go to the summer school. Now it's a little different. I'm just very pleased to see that the educational system is better now in the local unions because they do have good instructors and the courses are good,
mm-hmm.
Along with a little R&R for the hard-working reps, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See? But for a long time, it wasn't that way. It was a political thing.
It sounds like as early as 54, they were really concerned about yours getting too much of a power base.
Oh, yes.
Because we talked earlier about from the time you were steward and moving on up and into the first committee that you always had the people with solidarity behind you.
I really did.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I felt good about it.
Yeah.
You know, and when you feel good about something like that, you know you've got the people and that's the votes out there, there's just almost isn't anything you can't do.
Now, to what extent do you think of being a woman entered into it, Betty, in terms of their reactions and their trying to keep you under control?
Under control?
Not getting the kind of recognition when you came back to the conference. Do you think that that
played a role? Yes. It did. It played a role, being a woman, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, gee, that's kind of a hard thing there. They still tried to keep me. They treated me, you know, a lot of the fellows treated me like, I'm talking about a level above our own local union. Because our own local union, I finally got some of the guys would treat me like one of the rest of the people, but, you know, they were respectful and everything else, but I felt okay, was comfortable with them.
Mm-hmm.
But above that, they were all men.
Mm-hmm.
And they did kind of resent me, and I was young too, you know, and they thought, boy, this gal, but I had a reputation, no sleeping around and stuff like that, so they knew that, hey, no fooling around it, you know, and that I wanted to be there just because of my ability. But they did kind of resent me. They did resent me. They really did. I don't know, I get on, you know, on this committee or that committee, I was the only woman, you know. And it seemed like some of the fellows, you know, I'd walk up and they'd kind of stop talking, things like that, you know. And when I tried to get in on above California state level of politics, it was really tough. You know, I tried to get acquainted with some of these people, you know, and want to be involved in the politics beyond the state level. And they weren't very happy about it. They really weren't.
Now, where did you get your support from other women in the union? You talked about in 51, even that early at the convention, women making contact informally.
Oh, yes. There weren't very many, though, you know, but there were, you know. Well, what we would do was feel that naturally the girls were going to get together and discuss, you know, our problems and things like that in our own local unions and what our goals were, et cetera, et cetera. And it was very nice, but we didn't have much of a chance to get together later on. We'd all leave and go back to our own states, you know, and that sort of thing, see? And so it took a long time before they ever had much of a women's committee labor movement type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Many years. Really did.
Now, had you all talked about that earlier, even before it began?
Well, we had talked about our problems in the shop.
So it was much more formal.
Oh, yes, very informal. Oh, yes. It wasn't any organized type of you know, like a ad hoc committee type or anything like that, really. Nothing like that, no.
Now, I'm wondering a couple of more things in terms of the...